Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 102 of After Nine, the podcast where we try to answer the most honest questions in youth ministry and have some of the most honest guests. Today on the show, we have a good friend of the podcast, Peter Young, who is in many ways a pastor to the Jesus Film team. Yes, the Jesus Film that you watched when you were a teenager in your youth ministry. Yes, the same. He actually ministers to those that help go and translate that all around the world. And you might be surprised to hear how much similar his job is to yours, youth worker or youth minister. Before we jump into that, though, just a couple of updates. In case you haven't heard, our third host, co-host, tri-host, Kristen Lascola has been on the podcast, and we're really excited for an episode she's bringing to us next week. And then if you haven't checked out youthministrybooster.com and you are a youth pastor, it is the membership site for you. There's other membership sites for your ministry. Youth Ministry Booster is the membership site for you because we believe in self-care. After Nine is the podcast. Youth Ministry Booster is the community, and we want you to check it out. A two-week free trial just to go by and visit youthministrybooster.com to check it out. But until then, I'll catch you on the backside of this episode. Welcome with me, friend of the podcast and minister to missionaries, Peter Young. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of After Nine with a very special guest today. So I have lots of doppelgangers all over the world, apparently. And so whether it's my brother Josh in Tulsa or the guy that makes me coffee in Austin, I see you, man. I see you. But my favorite doppelganger to introduce you to on this show right now is the guy that I met randomly through church members, which are the best kind of friends in the whole world. His name is Peter Young, and he serves as the in-house pastor for Crew and Jesus Film. Ever heard of it? For all of those folks that are working on the recording team. So if you have ever heard of the Jesus Film or have ever worked or are associated with anything that's been Campus Crusade or Crew, Peter has ministered to the people that help make that possible all around the world. And it's an amazingly cool job, and Peter's an amazingly cool guy. And so I'm going to introduce him to you now. This is my buddy, Peter Young. Peter, how you doing today, man?
Doing so good. Thank you for having me on and sharing some time with me, man. So excited to be here and to talk a little bit.
Well, it's a rainy day here in Oklahoma, and we are hanging out talking about, Peter, your previous experience in youth ministry and maybe a little bit of your journey that got you into doing what you're doing now. How that is almost intrinsically related to a lot of what maybe what youth pastors are experiencing and feeling as they are trying to minister to folks that are on the front lines of ministry and mission and all the places that they are around the world as well. So. Yeah. Peter, catch us up a little bit. So I know what you're doing now, but before that, you were, like many of us, serving high school and college students on campuses. So give us a little bit of that history, that kind of involvement with stuff.
Yeah, I have a background doing different forms of next generation ministry. I started doing a children's ministry internship with a local church in Panama City Beach under a woman named Misty Hicks, and she was awesome. They let me run a VBS, which was a terrible idea.
Great kind of proving ground for ministry. It's like, if you can live through a week of VBS, you probably could do anything in ministry.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was so much worse than I remember. But I remember it going really, really well into the very last day. We had an obstacle course. We had like 30 kids crush it. It was awesome. And we were just burning like the last 10 minutes waiting for pickup. And this little girl, I was pushing a little boy in a swing. And there was this little girl who had just totally done the monkey bars like she was an eight-year-old. She was just doing so well. It was unbelievable. But at the last second, she slipped about midway across, and she put her arm about the middle of her body to catch herself. And so all her weight landed on her arm. And I couldn't run to get her quick enough, so I was about halfway there when I got there. And I heard her crying, and I turned the corner, and she lifted up her arm, and it was like a horseshoe. It was just complete. And I hadn't seen anything like that. I turned into like a ball. I immediately stopped adulting, and I was a broken man.
She's like, "You have to help me. It hurts." And you're like, "I can't do it."
The time her eyes hit her arm, she went up like another octave and screamed in pain and fear. So, I have a little bit of experience doing that. But my life was changed significantly because my first mentor, who's a youth pastor.
Yeah.
And I can say I'm not in the position I am now without them.
So we love hearing that. We don't always get to hear those stories. That's
true.
So that's good.
Good. Yeah. It was the first kind of spiritual mentor in my life. His name was Steve Irwin, like the crocodile hunter.
Perfect.
And he was a South American Methodist missionary.
Excellent.
And so I had a lot of questions, and I was in his office pretty much all the time. And I don't know why, but he gave me time. And so I think by spending a lot of time with him, I grew a lot. And so it was kind of from that relationship, a lot of ministry bloomed. That was doing, they gave me my first youth ministry internship.
Okay.
And I'm getting ready to go off to college at that point. Because of Steve, I ended up going on my first mission trip to Peru. And so it's while I'm there, I'm sharing the gospel and just getting a taste for what's it to be working with people who have never heard the gospel. And so by being out there, I started, was it Isaiah 6? Just the idea of like, who will I send?
Yeah, I'll go, yeah, Lord. Yeah.
But all that stuff was facilitated between two churches and two youth pastors who had an epic impact on my life. Mm. And so, but what's interesting is when I got off to college, my wife, I met my wife in college in St. Augustine, Florida, Fiber College.
Nice. Holler,
shout out.
Nice.
Andy Herko.
There you go.
But he was like my second, it was almost like a, it was a mentor. He was like an older brother. And Andy really taught me accountability and transparency. And I share all this to say, in college, I grew a lot. And a lot of people, when they get to college, they're doubting their faith. They struggle in all kinds of ways, make some really difficult life choices. And while I was there, because we grew so much, I said, man, we'd really love to give back. And so we were kind of contemplating, would we do college ministry? Because my mentor, Andy, was kind of moving on to be a campus pastor of another location of that church. And so, but what's interesting is Andy, Steve, and another dude whose name is Dean Plumley. Now, this guy is someone, if youth pastors probably heard about Sun Life.
Okay.
Dude named Dan Spader. I think they've started that a long while ago.
But yeah.
I came into contact with it because my good buddy, Dean Plumley, who's the National Director for Christian Surfers, United States of America. I got paid $500 as an intern, and I told everyone I got paid to surf. So they're like, whoa, bro.
Yeah.
Whoa. I think it was, I barely paid my rent, but it was one of the best experiences ever. And so all three of these guys, much like some people in ministry, maybe youth pastors, went through seasons of deep and severe struggle.
Okay.
And so not walking away from Jesus,
yeah,
but taking a break from ministry for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And all these guys talking about how important self-care was. That was something that really spoke to my heart. And so, I spent a lot of time doing different things. But eventually, after doing several years of college ministry, we pulled the trigger on seminary, moved to Orlando, Florida. And that's kind of how we got pulled into Crew eventually. But it was kind of, I call it the spaghetti bowl of passions. We had a bug for missions, but we also saw this huge need to take care of people doing amazing things.
Yeah.
You have all these amazing people that you love to the core of who they are, flawed and all that stuff. And you want to see them succeed, and you wonder like, well, what would it take? It's like, man, I love these people. I could do that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing that led us into what we're doing now is we're like, man, here's an opportunity to be involved in missions, and the impact through serving this team well, it's exponential, more than we could ever do.
Yeah,
even on the largest college campus, to be honest.
Which is in many ways like that's like the kind of the dream of youth ministry, right?
Oh
like,
yeah,
I am ministering to these young people because they are going to go in places in classrooms and hallways that I'll never get to go into, and it's the loving of God's people as you're hoping to equip them to minister in the places you can't be.
It's that being sent, and I know that. It's interesting, youth ministry, it seems like such a revolving door. You know, you get a new set every year, you get new people, but every 4 years, the house gets cleaned.
Right,
you
know? right.
And that can be disheartening.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is like youth ministry done well and you're doing the long game, like you're seeing where these people are going.
Yeah.
And you stay connected. And you know, you look at the parable of the soils, you understand that there's going to be different things that happen.
Yep.
And some you may not see fruit for a really long time, but... man, when you track long term with people, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm going through college. I went to a party," and you're like, "What the heck are they doing with their lives?" You never know. You never know, and it's the significance of just loving one person well.
Yeah.
But then when you learn to love, maybe a couple people well, and you see them do that well, so
which you can only know if you've played the game long enough, right?
Yeah.
That is the hardest part, and especially for a lot of our listeners that are young youth pastors serving.
Sure.
3 months, 9 months, less than 5 years. Like until you've actually graduated a freshman through or a middle schooler all the way through, you don't know the full life cycle of watching them kind of grow up into who they're learning to be.
Yeah.
And then especially on the other side of that 5, 6, 10 years in ministry,
when
you are, you know, marrying two of your former students together or they're calling you and telling you about, you know, the kid or like where they're going to go on mission trip in college or, you know, what they feel called to do with like the sum of their life. Like that's the stuff of youth ministry that doesn't happen in your weekly programming.
Right.
But it was because hopefully, prayerfully in part, the week in, week out commitment, Sundays, midweeks to them, that shows up later. And it is it is such, youth ministry is a farming game. And for so many people that are young youth pastors that have never been on a farm, never touched soil, you got to know that the game you're playing, even though it feels like the highs and lows of each week, it's actually this long, like you are a farmer, friend.
Oh,
like you are planting seeds, you are harvesting in years and in seasons that are way beyond what happened between, you know, 7 to 9 p.m. On a midweek service.
Yeah, big time. And I think too, you know, Brian Metz, youth pastor formerly at Calvary Chapel, Panama City Beach, at a church called Eastgate, handed me one of the most significant books of my life. It's The Pursuit of Holiness, Jerry Bridges.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so the book, you know, he's known for being practical, Jerry Bridges, I guess. A lot of people love NAVs.
NAVs.
But what's really cool is at the very, I think it's at the beginning of the book, or maybe in the first chapter, the idea is that, like, you know, we're a farmer. You know, where does all of our energy, all that we do, meet up with God's sovereignty? And, you know, some camps will be very strong and opinionated about all that stuff. But the best thing I've ever heard is, like, we're a farmer. The Lord will not go and sow those seeds that we're sowing. But at the same time, the Lord's the one that's doing all the work when the kids aren't in the room.
That's right. That's right.
When they're praying and they're alone with the Lord, he's the one doing the heavy heart lifting. Our job is to facilitate that stuff, or the job of youth ministers, at least. But all of us, really. And it's so interesting that when you're doing all that work, it is backbreaking. It is emotionally draining.
Yeah.
And some of you are like, I'm done. This has broken me. I don't ever want to go back. And
which for the life of a farmer, like farmers don't make seeds grow. They just prepare the conditions well enough that they might, right? Like, and that is such a thing. Like, it's so hard to understand as a youth pastor is like, well, if I just work harder, then it's guaranteed to be this way.
Sure.
And that's not always true. Like all you can do is the best that you can do, and then the prayerful preparation of what you can do. But you are just trying to create the environments and till the soil so the seed has the best possible opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it, like, farmers don't actually make seeds grow. They just prepare the environments for them to grow.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, an extra 4 hours tilling 1 week will not bear more fruit.
There's no promise. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you have to stay up with it, stay continuing. Stay. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Yeah, and I think, too, like, it seems like such a small, subtle little thing, but you mentioned the prayerful.
Yeah.
Like the prayerful preparation.
Yeah.
Because that's the deal. Like, as a youth pastor or even doing college ministry, I remember I was trying to build a team of 12 student leaders. I mean, it's not a lofty goal.
Right.
But it is.
Jesus did it. Seems like we should try.
Right. It ended up being 12 because I was trying to have enough leaders for each month of the year, even trying to do something for college students when they were out of season.
Sure.
And so, but even that is really difficult. But the idea of praying for your people, and that's the thing, is when they go off and you're like, you lose a phone number or maybe, you know, maybe they openly just, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. You know, I mean, we're not even talking about going to a different youth group or something. We're just talking about being off the reservation altogether. All you have is prayer. But the beginning, all you had was prayer. And the biggest weapon you have to bear in the life, the spiritual life and development of a youth is prayer.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's the other thing I've really learned a lot through this process of becoming a missionary and joining crew and being a part of this, is it's not about the work I'm going to put in this week. While that's relevant and it has bearing, but the most important thing is praying, praying for people.
Yeah.
You know? And so anyway.
No, that's good. It's a good word.
Yeah.
Well, that gives us some good backstory. You shared a little bit about maybe a disastrous moment in ministry. Is there something in the life of your time serving in youth and college and campus ministry that is kind of like the nugget of thing that you hold on to? Like, there was like this moment or this episode that even when things get really tough, like there is this kind of moment that you were like, no, that's true, and if that's true, I must continue.
Yes, wow. There's a lot of those.
Okay.
And a couple come to mind. I'll just say first, I came to faith in the fourth grade because I had my parents had us in a Catholic school, and I have an older sister and a younger brother. We weren't all too keen about that.
Okay.
So about 6 months, we got out. took a lot of complaining. Okay. But my parents, they put us in a Christian school, praise the Lord, for some reason, and we were only there a year, but Miss Coulson taught the gospel, essentially. Mm. And, like, I draw on that moment. That moment gives me strength. And that woman, is the big kicker here, is her name is Miss Coulson, the headmaster who would go and sit down and talk to you about your, you know, your decision, your desire to want to trust Jesus for salvation and follow him all the days of your life. Like, neither of these two people know what I'm doing now.
Mm.
And this is, like, this is the biggest thing anyone who is blessed by someone doing youth ministry can ever do, in my opinion. That is to go back and say thank you.
Mm.
And that is what I think I've spent most of my life trying to stress, not to people, but to myself. And it's almost, it could be annoying for some people. I call it, hey, man, thank you so much for investing in me. Like, back and telling people that. But Ms. Coulson and Mr. Tucker, I believe, are both alive to this day. I've tracked down Mr. Tucker, and I'm going to get in touch with him at some point soon. But I draw great strength.
Hmm.
And that solidifies my faith now. And I think most recently, and it's in the last year, I was struggling with just the idea of what we're doing, and it takes a lot of you have to build a team of people that are praying for you as a missionary, and then praying for the efforts of your team, as well as supporting you financially each month. And we had moved into a house. We still pay rent there, but we were blessed to be in there, and they could charge a lot more than they do, but they don't, because they're awesome.
Good people.
And you need good people. But I was a little distraught because real small stuff, right? But it's where my heart was. My lawn was dying. My trees were dying.
Yeah.
I didn't have the tools I needed to take care of it. I most definitely couldn't pay for a service.
Yeah.
And I was just really discouraged. And I was like, Lord, even the beautiful things that you have given me to be a good steward of, I cannot be a good steward of.
Mm.
I was limited with my resources. And I was so discouraged. I was like, I was thinking, all right, maybe if the lawn and all this other stuff hangs in for 8 months and we're able to then take care of it and I got the right tools for it, maybe then it'll still be alive. No lie. The next week, I don't know. Maybe if I was a little more astute to, like, agriculture, all this could be easily explained. But till then, I'm just going to be like, well, I was moving to the Lord. Our grass was beautiful, but the one tree we have in our front yard and a similar tree in the backyard, the only two we have in our lot, were blooming.
Okay.
And I don't mean like, oh, a couple things came
out.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It was vibrant green. Mm. And I just felt the Lord kind of saying, like, I will provide. Mm. And I'll provide when it looks like it won't happen.
Yeah.
And even more so to my accusation, but not an accusation, but just this point of concern, to the point that it almost kind of made the Lord seem like he won't provide for what he has, only he can put
out. Could provide, yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's so similar. You know, whether the Lord puts someone in a brand new position.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I'm so excited. And it's like the third month in, and you're oh, wait a second.
I don't want to do this.
Yeah, what the Lord has put you in place for, the Lord will provide for. Mm. But there will be suffering, you know.
what a good caveat. The place that the Lord has put you in, he will provide for you. In the place in which he has put you, yet, albeit, also, asterisk, there will be suffering. Yeah, that's good.
Clause down there somewhere.
Well, help us know, brother. So one of the things that you do now is you continue that ministering to God's people that are ministering in places on mission all around the world.
Sure.
Maybe explain a little bit more about that. I know, like, one of our first conversations, I didn't even know the levels or the robustness of the ministry. Like, I think we hear about crew. We think about campus stuff. We think about camp stuff, activities, things. Mm-hmm. We hear about Jesus film. We think about the VHS tape that's, like, on the shelf that maybe from a few years ago we showed in like a midweek pinch. We were like, hold on, let's watch this film about Jesus. or we know, like, we have the image of, like, the yellow Isuzu truck with the sound system and the, like, you know, the king size bed sheet screen and people, like, broadcast in different languages. But I didn't even, there's a whole division of what you do for these teams going around the world. So maybe share a little bit more about what you do, and then maybe there's some conversation we can have about the kind of work you do and some of the skills and tools that you apply that relate to youth ministry.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, none of this work gets done without someone being willing. And that's where everything starts. The movements of the Lord start with those that are willing. And the enemy really wants to choke that out early.
Mm.
So he'll do that with fear. He'll do that with the fear of money, provision, safety, comfort even. And so this team are people who've made that commitment and they've pushed past that. And so they are not to be put on a pedestal as turbo Christians or something, but I would just say they're willing. They've made a commitment. and they've taken a step of faith, and the Lord has blessed them to the point where they can go out and do this. So they're radical in their willingness. Mm. This is kind of how I look at it. And so these people, they go out and they do recordings. They're working with UUPGs, unengaged, unreached people groups. Just flows off the tongue. And so they're going out on assignment somewhere between 2 and 8 weeks long. They're working in sometimes it's very well-developed countries. Other times it's very closed and dangerous okay. ones. And it's all over the place. They work with contacts in the Jesus film that live there. And so the tensions, the safety concerns are all that much more ratcheted up for people that live there on the ground that we work with these people. And so not mentioning where they go. But anyway, at times they face a lot of stuff. It's kind of twofold, this team's challenges. It's the nature of the work of the ministry. So they're out, they're traveling, they're isolated. At times they're tempted.
Mm.
But they're very focused, and so, you know, they do well. But inevitably, you're going to pick up forms of self-care that may not be great. Mm. You're going to find ways to cope with things. You're going to develop habits. Mm. And so some of those that may not even be honoring God. And so, but being in community is one of those things, but because they're out so often. So the nature of the work's very challenging. It's very rigorous, doing these recordings, translating them, and unreached people.
So let me just pause real quick there. Sure. So recording team, what are they actually going out and recording?
Sure. Yeah, so the Jesus film, being a film from 1979, it's an evangelistic tool now. They started the ministry in 1999. The idea is they take this film and they dub it over unreached people group languages.
Okay.
So you have to work with a translator.
Yeah.
And so
like languages that may not have any kind of codex or mm-hmm. written form or whatever. They're, yeah. they're like, these are like remote languages yeah. that are like dialects or forms that may be only servicing thousands of folks, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. millions of folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're big challenges, illiteracy, oral traditions. So these teams are going out and they're recording this. Almost all these people are straight out of college. There are some radical empty nesters that go out and do this.
Okay.
Work as
okay.
Well.
All right. Yeah.
And anybody hearing this, doesn't matter how old you are, the Lord will use you, young or old. But, so, yeah, they go out and they do the recordings. It's real simple. You and I, we might get four twin mattresses, blankets, and we're creating a soundproof spot
yeah.
to do this.
To do this very thing, yeah. Podcasting in the third world. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, and they do it. And so you're inside working with a translator, and you're doing word for word each dialogue line of this film.
Wow, okay.
And I'm outside with the laptop and the headphone, and, you know, we're trying to make it not look like a Godzilla film or something.
right.
So you're syncing it. And so that process, doing the 20-plus spoken parts of the film, it's labor intensive, and you're sitting down, you're doing this stuff, and oftentimes the people out in the field, people doing voice work depending on safety, and it just takes a long time.
Yeah.
And so they're out there, they're doing that, and then they go through whether some are dealing with violence, theft, there's a lot of things, resources that make them targets.
Hmm.
Plus they're white, some of them, you know, and they're going out there, and so it's really
they stick
obvious.
Out. Yeah.
And so that's one thing. It's dangerous. There's something at Crew, and I encourage anyone, if you ever go to Orlando, go by the Crew headquarters and ask for a Jesus film tour.
Okay.
There you'll see eventually there's something called the Wall of Honor. Mm. And, there might be 13 people that have been martyred in the field. Mm. And a lot of them some of them are pretty violent. Some of them are accidents and some are sickness.
Hmm.
But it's really beautiful kind of seeing what effort is put into it. And so some of them are on the international recording team. Some are people that live in country. And so, but anyway, when these people come back, the second side of the difficulty, it's not just the nature of the work anymore. It's the care. It's
okay.
the community. They have a 2-week mandatory rest period
okay.
where they're back home and all these people are from Orlando. And so connect with your local church.
Yeah.
You know, what are your bros doing that week?
Right, they're all working.
Well, how about for a weekend? Well, one's out of town. So, like, your ability to connect and to grow is dictated by that mandatory 2-week rest period, or if you get a little bit more time. But the idea of how can the parachurch not be the classic parachurch where you're doing an amazing mission, right? But you are kind of unto yourself.
Yeah. Untethered, unleashed.
Unleashed. But it's so important to be a part of the church because that's where care happens. Mm. And that's where life on life happens. And that's where discipleship happens and mentoring. You know, all that stuff shouldn't. And if it is in an organization, all that stuff's happening within it, that's good. But you need that stuff. And that might even be an unfair burden on some of those people within that organization. You want that happening in the church. And so we have the blessing to work alongside this team, to love them, to serve them well, just like I would with my buddy Steve or, you know, maybe Andy or Dean if I ever got an opportunity to minister to them. People champion, doing amazing stuff. I want to serve these people well. And they're doing work. Man, I don't know if I want to do that stuff. Mm. I will tell you, I'd love to serve them well. And so we get to help them connect with their local church. We get to help them find means of discipleship mentoring. And just talk character and content.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, you picked up an addiction to X, Y, or Z.
Okay.
Or you're building some behaviors that might not be great. Or you're noticing, hey, I'm dealing with a lot of fear. Like, well, what's bringing that up? So we're doing a couple things. We're facilitating a safe space to talk about things. Debriefing them when they get back. Hey, what did the Lord lay on your heart? What are you learning? What discouraged you?
Yeah.
And what was the Lord trying to do in your life? And how do these trips line up with that?
Maybe give us a little more of that kind of that structure. Like, what are some of the questions that you have them ask? Is like a certain patterning of like when you meet with them, like let's examine like the heart, let's examine the relationships. Mm, like,
yeah.
How do you kind of like, I mean, because they're coming back and they're probably all, as much as they went out all fired up, maybe they're coming back all balled up with like, man, I've seen stuff. I'm worn out. I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. How do you begin to kind of like either peel back or unfurl or massage or kind of welcome them back to a different kind of routine?
Yeah, I think a good example, I won't name drop because I'm not supposed to. I'm not supposed to. That's proper English. But no, there is a, and she'll know who she is, but there's a very near and dear young woman that lived with us for a little while. Who we actually have a room in our home. It's Blank's room. And so she made a commitment. It was an internship. It's a year to the Jesus film.
Yeah.
And this particular and wonderful woman of the Lord was still kind of new to like the church and was still like building community and stuff. And my wife and her, they just clicked somehow. And so I got to know her and I love her dearly. And so she was like, we had joined the Jesus film and she had been praying about wanting to do something for the Lord and not wanting to go directly into what she had done for undergrad. And so I you know, she had prayed about it. And I remember when she came back from the grocery store with my wife, she's like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm like, what? One run to Trader Joe's and boom, on the team, I'm a missionary. And so I remember when we were talking about one of the big things when you become a missionary is you got to raise ministry partners.
Right.
And that's a stumbling block for some people. And I will say this, it's not just a stumbling block for the person having to do it, but it's often a stumbling block for the people that know you best.
Yeah.
Wait, what are you doing?
Right.
Oh, wow. And so whether people mean to or not, unintentionally or intentionally, there's a lot of discouragement, I think, period, for anyone that's taking a step that the Lord has called them to, trying to be obedient and remain kind of what the calling is. And so there are always going to be people, detractors, even people that love the Lord who may not intentionally mean to, that might discourage you. And so anyway, her decision to join the team, she shared with other people in her life, and there were like words of caution and curiosity.
Sure.
And so, but she has gone on many trips now. She's well into her internship and had to make a decision whether she would do it for another year.
Okay.
And she had come back from her third trip. And so Molly and I had her over, we're hanging out in our sectional, and we asked her, hey, could you give us a review? I mean, we're real excited. So she gets her computer, hooks it up to the TV with the HDMI, and starts just walking us through stuff. Man, beautiful stuff. It was also probably the most tense trip she'd ever had for safety concerns.
Sure.
I'll put it that way. And she got, they were in this group where they were at one point kind of in a little bit of a pinch, and she got kind of handy and resourceful and found some flights, and they kind of left when they needed to. And so when she got back, she's like, how'd it go? And so I guess practically we're in a setting in our home. And we're asking her questions first, like, how'd it go? Asking her, how are you feeling? What are you feeling? And really paying attention and making sure to identify in our own minds, what are the praises?
Okay.
Whether she realizes it or not.
Yeah, and that's
one thing that was really big, I think, and will continue to be really important in this process is helping people, because either we take it for granted naturally or maybe we just lack the ability to see it maybe right when it's in front of our face, helping people rejoice with the things that God's accomplished and then helping them understand the significance of it. And I think especially in youth ministry, you don't know, in a sense, you don't know what you're doing.
You don't know what you're doing and you don't know what you're looking at, right?
Yeah.
Like, because you're looking at it all the time and you don't get to see.
Yeah.
So naming the things worth celebrating.
Yeah. And then
why. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And really, really taking time to sit down, camp out. I think, I think it's interesting. If you're going to climb a mountain, you have certain spots that you have to pause. The whole point is to acclimate, right?
Right, right.
And so I would kind of say to
move a little, camp a little. Move a little, camp a little.
There you go. There you go. Write a book about it. It'd be perfect. Move a little, camp a little, whatever. So the idea really is, I think, to ascend kind of where the Lord wants us to be. And I know it sounds really weird, but the idea is to pause. And I have learned this personally, and this is what I apply in this process, and that is the Israelites, anytime the Lord, you know, they had their back to something. Hey, the Red Sea. Oh, my gosh. We dead unless it's parted.
What now? Yeah.
Or other situations. When they were on the other side of that, they would build something.
Hmm.
And so, you know, whether it's an altar with a plaque, churches, we like plaques.
Certificate. Yeah.
Certificate. Or, you know, we're going to give you this, and it's something to sit in your office. But we need to, as a people of God, always remember where we were, where we are, and what it took to get there.
Mm,
we get so used to being children of God and being blessed, and there's nothing wrong with that. Be used to being in daddy's arms. Be used to being loved well. That's nothing wrong with that. And it's not even to say we're going to take it for granted because we're human beings. But the idea of hosting a time where you can give God the praises that he's worthy of, that we kind of take for granted. A safe passage all the way to this third world country where you didn't have this or this happen when all of it could have happened. So I think giving praise to what is praiseworthy.
Mm.
I think not patting people on the back, not building ego, but the significance of, wow, thank you for taking the time to go love those that would never be able to ask you to come.
Mm.
And so like that's the whole idea with being sent ones. And I think that's also a big thing. Reviewing that idea that Christ has commissioned you, mm-hmm. whether that's through the great commandment or the commission to go and love others well.
Mm.
And that's the whole idea. You know, there's this idea when we meet with people and I share about our mission, we want to partner. The word we use is koinonia in the Greek.
Yeah.
And that means it's not sexy, if that's appropriate on a podcast. Because what it means is to basically enter into suffering, to do what is modeled. Christ coming into this raggedy world in a raggedy way and living in rags, serving raggedy people.
Yeah.
And so like that whole idea of entering into the life of people that, you know, they haven't even asked for you to come yet. They don't know that they can ask for you to come.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it means. You're entering into the brokenness of the world, whether that's the life of students and coming in, you're the new guy. They didn't ask you to come.
Yeah.
And some of them may not want you to come. And that's the other thing to keep in mind. When these people go into closed countries, you know, the receptions, they're not, you know, sometimes it's not there.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
You're like, why am I here? Like, this is hard.
Yeah.
But it's
don't they know
it.
What I'm doing for
don't
them?
They, come on. Yeah. Come on.
Right, right.
So, but just so giving what is praiseworthy praise and talking about, you know, what you're doing, you're modeling Jesus to people.
Mm.
And people are radically impacted by that. And you don't know.
Well, okay. That's amazing. And I think for a lot of folks, that's a great starting point that they don't always know what they're celebrating or why, and they don't always remember their calling like they should. But you had shared a little bit earlier that some folks come back with new baggage, whether it's addictions or whether it's new struggles, maybe bad thought patterning or processing.
Mm-hmm.
And that word self-care, I think, is really important because it's not just what has done, but how you take care of you.
Yeah.
So how do you help a person that comes back from a trip that maybe has developed some negative habits or behaviors? How do you begin to open that up to a level of self-care that they can begin to, first of all, see and then address in the right kind of way?
Well, I think you know, creating an environment that is grounded and affirmed and stated as being about acceptance, 100% loving. And so that's our chief mandate, to love. And so, and especially if you detect or someone confides in, and if they confide in you or you're noticing and you're picking up, and sometimes I want to tell you that might be the first thing you notice. And so when someone's got this,
is the notice the negative instead of the positive, because you haven't seen them. And so
and so, and that's where the Lord's moved in my life most significantly, is when I've got these areas. And I didn't go and ask for a rebuke, or I didn't go and ask, say, like, I want to open myself up
to
spiritual reproof.
Peter, what in my life do you think is off the rails?
Speak to me, Lord. So I think just understanding, there's a guy named Dave Aukerman once said that, you know, when you've got to speak to someone, it's like dealing with a broken leg. Don't go in there swinging it around. Like, you need to set that gently.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, I guess, in order to do that well, what's dictated is time. So when you get someone, you notice some things, or there might be something suspect, Or you might be like, hey, your search history, what's up with that?
Right, right, right.
Let's talk about that. I think is to affirm, hey, listen, here's what I know about you. Here's who you are. Here's who you are in Christ. And I'm here for you. I'm here to support you. And so I've noticed blank. Why?
Yeah.
And
okay.
You let them talk. And this is where someone like me could really use a lot of work. And that's listen. Mm. Listen. And what's interesting is the Hebrew for listen is shema. I had a rabbi I kind of studied under. He would say, shema, young. And so shema doubles for like, listen, obey, hear, yeah. Israel, your Lord God. And so the idea, I think there's something to sacred space. To listening and treating it appropriately, because you're dealing with somebody's life, you know. And the hope, the end game is that this person doesn't leave, this person doesn't feel rejected, but they double down in their commitment, they double down in their relationship with the Lord, and they allow the Lord to do the heavy lifting, not you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're there just to ask and provoke questions and thought, and so depending on the situation, they're all a little different. But I think asking why,
yeah,
and letting them share.
That's good.
Hearing why. And I think the other thing is realizing that, okay, hey, your spiritual enemy roams about you, and he wants to devour you. And he's not going to do that. He's not a wrecking ball that just knocks over a beautiful building. He comes in and he infiltrates. He wants to dilute truth that you believe in and wants to use something for that.
Peter, that's a good word. And I think for a lot of our listeners and consideration for the hard work they do in youth ministry, there are those questions of health, and we often talk a lot. I mean, the namesake Afternoon comes from the questions you ask yourself, the place you take yourself after a big youth ministry happening. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of us, the ways in which we respond to youth ministry as a happening really sets the tone for the next youth ministry thing.
Yeah.
And so whether those are positive self-care things or negative self-care things, it takes someone else to identify that in you. And that's one of the things that's so important, is that you can't see all the edges of you. I mean, we call it a blind spot, call it the reason for community, but there is so much about you that you can't see.
Mm.
And especially when it comes to your health. Like, you're usually the last person to know whether or not you're healthy or unhealthy.
That's when you know it's really bad.
Right. Your pants will tell you first, and then your spouse will tell you after. Yeah. But it's one of those that you are usually the last person to know. And I think if you don't have someone in your life that you would welcome to have them say, you know, what about me have you noticed differently than the last time we talked? Like, that is a critical element of what it means to minister, and a critical element of what it means to be worthy, ready, able to continue in ministry. And so, brother, thank you so much for sharing today.
Yeah.
For our folks that maybe want to learn more from you or catch up with you, social media, online stuff, how do they find you? How do they follow with you? How do they prayerfully support you and also partner with you in the work that you're about?
Well, tricky thing. The international recording team, a lot of our stuff cannot be online. And so this presents a great opportunity to find a solution to help people connect. I would say for prayer, the thing you can be praying for, I think personally for myself, is my wife and I are praying to be fully funded by the end of November. And my wife's also due with our fourth little girl in November. So prayer that she would be healthy. Prayer that the Lord would get us to our assignment where we could be working with all of these missionaries and this giant team. Full time. And I think for our team, for their care, pray for the interns that have to consider whether or not they want to do another year, that the Lord would speak plainly to them, and that whatever decision it would be, it would not be made in fear of man, but it would be made with the joy that the Lord leads us in when we take steps of obedience. And then praying for the assignments. This team has over 600 languages that are literally sitting and waiting for two people to come.
Wow.
And we're talking about generations that will go either with Scripture for the first time, and it will be shared from parent to child till the end of the age, till Christ comes, or without it.
Hmm.
And so just praying that the Lord would provide financial support for this team, emotional care for this team, and community camaraderie for this team, and then that they would find a great church home in Orlando.
Hey team, thanks again so much for listening, and please, please check out the show notes today, afternine.show/102, to find out ways that you can pray and partner with Peter and Molly in their ministry for missionaries around the world.
Thanks for listening to After Nine. To continue the conversation, find us on Twitter or Facebook at After Nine Ministry, or visit www.afternineministry.com to subscribe and learn more.